WGTD is supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu. Support for the morning show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street. Online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. I am so pleased to be welcoming back to the morning show today for her monthly visit to the program, Nan Calvert, who helps to broker these environmentally themed morning shows once a month, although we certainly try to touch on matters of environmental concern more often than that. But officially, there is always this place on the morning show. And Nan always brings an interesting special guest with her. And in this particular case, I'm especially delighted because this is someone I've known for a long time and admired greatly and not seen in way too many years. So I am thrilled to be reconnecting with Reverend David Rhodes, a retired professor from LSTC, the Lutheran School of Theology down in Chicago. And Pastor Rhodes' wife, Sandy Roberts, was formerly a pastor at the church where I am minister of music. So I have a very strong connection and admiration for Sandy Roberts. And that's how I actually came to first know David Rhodes. So I'm very, very happy about this opportunity for us to reconnect. And of course, more important than all that is the important matters which he is here to talk about. We welcome both of you to the morning show. And Nan, tell me why you know Reverend David Rhodes and why you issued this invitation to him.
Well, good morning, everybody, on this gorgeous day. Gosh, Greg, now I feel like I kind of pulled off this terrific coup. I don't know that there's anybody in Greater Racine who doesn't know David Rhodes at this point. So I think one of the reasons that I wanted him to come on, and something that we've discovered just since we arrived at the station when we were talking prior to airing the show, I hope that he'll have time to touch on the Natural Step program that's been introduced to Greening Greater Racine. And we're going to talk about Greening Greater Racine itself and then some other possibilities in the Greater Racine area that perhaps are going on or we don't know are going on, and we hope to invite those people to the table too. So I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Very good. And again, Pastor Rhodes, it's really great to have you here.
Thank you.
Good to have you here.
It's a privilege to be here, be interviewed by you. I listen to your program often, and I think you're one of the best interviewers in the country.
Cool.
I think you should be known as well as Studs Terkel.
Oh well.
And,
well, blush, so blush, blush. Thank you.
I'm grateful to be part of a conversation.
Well, good. Now that we know that we all love each other, this is good. Good to know. Good
now
place
we can
to begin.
End the program. And
all right.
Yes.
Go have coffee. Go have coffee. I wanted to begin with the notion of the green congregation. And I especially wanted to give you a chance to kind of talk about that because I want you to first of all say what it is and then correct maybe a presumption which some of our listeners may have made incorrectly, as I did, about kind of the scope of this practice of green congregation. So just begin with what it means for a given congregation to be designated or designate themselves as a green congregation?
Well, actually, there is kind of a national movement in many denominations and religions to encourage their communities to embrace greening, in which what's involved is taking five areas: worship, education, building and grounds, discipleship at home and work, and public witness, political advocacy. And the idea is to have a holistic approach so that the whole congregation becomes imbued with kind of an ethos of caring for creation so that it becomes as important as loving your neighbor as yourself, that you love creation and you care for creation, because that's a vocation that, you know, is deeply biblical for the biblical traditions and is embraced by many other religions as well. What's unique about the situation in Racine is that we have formed a coalition of congregations called the Racine Green Congregations. We meet three times a year. We usually have an educational portion of the program, learning something about what's going on environmentally in Racine, and then we report on what each congregation may be doing. Are we having a season of creation in our congregation with worship? Are we going through a process of getting an audit from Focus on Energy and lowering our energy costs? Are we adopting green cleaning products? Are we stopping the use of pesticides on our lawns? What are we doing to be responsible and to show that we are a community that's rooted in the earth and cares about the earth?
And when a congregation does this, I mean, decides to take this as seriously as you've just described, are we typically talking about what they do, the choices they make as a congregation with, for instance, their own church property and how they care for it? Or is it more rooted in each of those congregants, that is, each member of that congregation, what they're doing with their lawns back home? Or is it both, or is it one more than the other?
Ideally, it's both. But the way it's happened is that it's become focused primarily on the congregation itself, its worship practices, its educational program, its building and grounds. And then hopefully it leads to a commitment of individual members to do this in their homes.
I don't remember if in your description you said this, but when was this notion first formed, the idea of the Green Congregation? What kind of a time span are we talking about?
I guess in my own case, it was in the early 90s, and we began producing information out of the Lutheran School of Theology and a website that would foster congregations greening. I held a number of workshops around different cities. But there's also a group called Green Faith out east that's interfaith. There's the Interfaith Power and Light organization. There is Earth Ministry and Eco Recovery out in the West Coast. There is down in Chicago Faith in Place. So there are a lot of comparable organizations. We started with a interfaith and interdenominational approach with a website called Web of Creation. And I have, in the last 5 years, initiated a group called Lutherans Restoring Creation, and we have extensive programs across our denomination, not only for congregations, but for seminaries, for colleges, for camps, for synods. We're gearing up for the 500th anniversary of the Reformation in 2017, which would involve promoting an eco-reformation so that the whole church embraces this. We've spent two millennia focusing on our relationships with God, our relationship with each other, but we've neglected our relationship with the earth and our vocation to serve the earth and to care for the earth. So the goal in all of this is to make an effort to see in what ways we can express this care of the earth, care for God's good creation. We're in deep trouble, as I think everybody knows, in air, land, water, atmosphere. We are just degrading and undermining the very systems which support us. And we see this as a profoundly religious issue. And it makes a difference in which way we go about it, but we have lots of colleagues and partners who are not engaged in religion, who have very similar values and commitments, sometimes a lot more.
You and I happen to both be Lutheran, and we've kind of mentioned Lutherans a couple of times through the course of this initial conversation. But to help specify or clarify the extent to which you've seen this kind of concern in other faith communities beyond Lutheran.
Yeah. Well, let me first say that we're fortunate in our tradition that we have a long tradition of a sacramental theology that sees all his life with reverence as sacred. And we see God's glory in all things, and we understand our vocation to be caring for creation. We also have a long tradition of caring for the most vulnerable with hospitals and orphanages and homes for the aged. And this is an extension of that, vulnerable species and vulnerable ecosystems. Presbyterians are very active in a program they have. The Unitarian Universalists have the Green Sanctuary program. The Methodists have more recently been active on this on a more regional level. There are just a lot of other denominations. And, of course, it's a dimension of every religion, Islam, Hindu. And right now the Green Faith Program out east, which has a very extensive program, is doing a series of webinars on different religions and what resources they have and what actions they are taking.
Hmm. I'm just curious.
Add that right now one of the special things is that the Pope is coming forth with a major statement on climate change. And there's a great deal of anticipation for that and a desire to have conversation about it when it comes out. And I think this is in some ways going to be a game changer for all religions because it's going to engage Roman Catholics, which is huge in the world. Hmm. And it's going to stimulate other denominations as well.
Hmm. I'm just curious, if we looked back 100 years, if we traveled in a time machine back to the typical library or the typical church library 100 years ago or 200 years ago, would we find next to nothing written about this whole issue, essentially? I mean, has it been that dormant an issue or interest, generally speaking, in terms of organized religion, as far as you can tell?
As far as I know, it really has. And, you know, now some historians and theologians are going back through church history and trying to recover, particularly in the very early church. There was a much more integration of the understanding of human beings in relation to creation. And, of course, it's true in the Bible. We pick out the human relationship with God, and we neglect that it's creation history. I mean, it's all one in the biblical materials. Hmm. But you know, the Reformation did bring out some of it, Thomas Aquinas, others, but in the Roman Catholic tradition, but for the most part, not, and certainly not at the local church level.
Right, and not in any way resembling what we're talking about
right now.
For those of you just joining us on the morning show, this is the monthly visit of the United Environmental Council, and Nan Calvert's guest joining us today is Reverend David Rhodes, here to talk first about so-called green congregations, but then an initiative, which I think you were saying really originates with that, called Greening Greater Racine, which seeks to kind of broaden this out to even a higher level. Nan, I'm just curious, in all of the extensive work that you do, how much have you sort of come in contact with any of these so-called green congregations or known very much about this whole side of the environmental initiative in this area?
Well, I'm very fortunate because I spent so much time with Racine Dominican Eco-Justice Center since the day it was formed. Mm. So for me, it's nothing new, shall we say. But I think for the most part, for most people, whether you are a religious person, a spiritual person or not, this is a very new thing. Not necessarily a new thing, but a thing that people don't know about. And I think, too, that sometimes congregations, regardless of denomination, don't realize the power that they hold to influence and change for the better. I mean, when you think of the actual physical acreage that congregations around Racine occupy, what could be done in terms of modeling best practice in terms of landscaping or how you deal with your stormwater runoff, how you deal with your parking lot, how you deal with the actual energy consumption of your building. These could be amazing models for the remainder, for the rest of the community, regardless of what religion you are. They're so big and they're right out there. People can drive by or walk by or go there on a regular basis. So the potential right now is really pretty much unlimited for places like these to have a great deal of influence. And certainly, you know, the moment you step onto the property of the Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center, I mean, you are enveloped by what can be done. And you don't think of it as necessarily being a religious organization in and of itself. It was certainly started by Dominican nuns, but, you know, that sort of falls away when you become immersed in all of the resource conservative things that go on a daily basis there from sunup to sundown.
Right. And whether or not you yourself might feel sympathy or empathy or be comfortable with, you know, any of those religious specifics that are part of their own legacy, that doesn't have anything to do with the environmental concern which they have. I mean,
right.
In other words, you need not be part of that faith tradition
no.
to appreciate and learn a lot from what they're doing.
Absolutely. And that's really one of the basics. You don't have to be a Roman Catholic or an Anglican or any religion for that matter in order to care for the earth, because it's our responsibility outside of the human constructs of religion or no religion.
And just going back to what you were saying about how churches tend to be prominent places visually, among other ways,
right.
In our community, I'm thinking of it happens to be a Lutheran church not far from downtown Racine. Good-sized building that has huge solar panels all over
yes.
its roof,
mm-hmm.
And every time I drive past that, it's a statement on some level that this is something we should all think about: pulling energy from the sun instead of out of other sources that do so much damage. And just by being able to see that on a very regular basis, one hopes that that's in and of itself an important statement.
Absolutely. I mean, when you think of the expansive grounds that many churches have, just imagine what oases of water conservation and species conservation they could be if they replaced even 50% of that turf grass with a native habitat. Or just, you know, plant native trees. And, you know, I mean, it's amazing what could be done. And then to be able to pull in your congregation and help them take ownership of it and then inculcate those kinds of principles in their own yards, it would be life-changing. It would change a city, really, when you think about it.
Well, as it turns out, there are higher aspirations than even that, which Reverend Rhodes wants to tell us about. Tell us about this notion of taking this idea a step further in this initiative, which I think is called Greening Greater Racine.
Well, last fall, the steering committee of mostly elderly folks in this Racine Green Congregation program said, let's see if we could try and green the city of Racine or initiate a movement that would encourage it. And so we invited all the people we knew from all the different environmental groups in Racine together for a meeting and formed Greening Greater Racine, a community initiative, an inclusive environmental movement of faith communities, environmental organizations, businesses, government leaders, individual citizens, working to inspire, educate, I'm reading our statement, and motivate people to take action to make a healthier and more sustainable life in Greater Racine now and in the future. And Sister Janet Weicker of the Eco Justice Center, along with other folks, have been very active in getting this started as we've expanded it. Well, we decided that the different groups we would identify would be the faith communities, which already had engaged, the environmental communities, of which there were many, and then businesses, government, and the general public. We think of it as a grassroots movement, not a top-down movement. And we're looking for partners. We're not looking to tell people what to do. So we planned some events that would engage all these people. So we had a workshop in April for the environmental and faith groups. We had a breakfast meeting of governmental representatives from county, city, and the municipalities in Racine, east of the Eye. We had a meeting of business folks for lunch, and in the evening at the Golden Rondell, we had a public event. So we're now trying to figure out how we can take things forward from here, because we asked each of the groups, what would you like to see happen after this? So the movement, it's been astounding how eager so many people are to be connecting with other people who are working on these things and to find ways to work together to move it forward.
Mm. And you mentioned before we went on the air, or at least the sense I had from what you said is maybe some astonishment at just how much is already underway. I mean, all kinds of different groups, many of them with no direct connection with one another, or maybe no tangible cooperation between them or coordination, but in fact are working incredibly hard on a whole array of environmentally related issues.
I have been astounded. When you think of the environment, we found 25 different environmental groups working in some way with earth and with water, land. The Racine Urban Garden Network, the Eco Justice Center, which we talked about, Riverbend, Sierra Club, Root Pike Watershed Initiative has lots of activities, lots of things going. Root River Council, the Wild Ones, the Wild Root Market Movement, trying to get a market in Racine, the Citizens Climate Lobby, the Land Trust that Nan works with, the Master Gardeners, over 200 Master Gardeners in an organization. SEED, which is about economic development in relation to the environment. We brought all representatives of most of these groups together, and they were very, very excited to be together and to be seeing what they could do together they couldn't do alone. Then when we looked into the government agencies, we found out that the city of Racine has done itself an extraordinary amount. They now have LED streetlights. They have solar panels on city buildings. They have done a great deal with their parks and beaches. And they're an arbor city, tree city. They're a bird city. They have had the harbor certified as environmentally safe by certain criteria. Both the mayor, John Dickert, as well as the city manager, Tom Friedel, are 100% in favor of moving forward with doing what they can, but they also want to get out what they've already been doing. And I meet with Tom next week to go over what all they've been doing, to see if we can assist in promoting what's been done. Then I was astonished when I looked at the businesses. We have a host of businesses that are engaged in both producing sustainable products and engaged in sustainable business practices. You think, first of all, Vesey Johnson. But if you thought that was the end of it, it was the beginning of it, because you've got Butterbuds, which has done a lot with their products, and they have a sustainable business program within their company. Cree is the largest producer of LED lights in the country. Great Northern Corporation promotes itself as being on the forefront of sustainability in packaging and displays. Incinerator, promoting disposal of organic waste. Kranz Corporation with the green cleaning products and the green process that they have. Modine produces a variety of engine performance advances. In addition to that, Sealed Air, I mean, you go on their website and Sealed Air says sustainability is at the core of what we do. And we just had a United Natural Foods Incorporation Distribution Center build an LED building out near the highway in the Racine County. And they are very eager to be part of kind of a coalition of this. And also Pacific Sands, which used to be in Racine, now it's in Kenosha, owned by a local Michael Mickey, the son of Don Mickey, our colleague at Carthage College. And they make some incredible products that are cleaning products and that have nothing in them that's toxic. I think Racine County in this area, and maybe all southeast, I don't know outside, but it's a hub. It's a hub of environmental innovation and sustainable business practices. And I'd like to see the Racine County Economic Development Corporation promote this as a hub and as a way of drawing other industries into the area. Because if you become aware that this is a place where it's going to be very friendly to what you do and other people are doing it, and we're trying to produce some success among small businesses. I'm especially interested in small businesses. I think they can make an incredible difference, and we're working with Racine Downtown Corporation and Rely Local in an effort to sort of garner some so we can develop a sustainable business network here that meets regularly, that has scorecard, works toward sustainability. Focus on Energy has an enormous number of resources available for this. And I went to the couple nights ago to the Sturtevant Village Council, and they're very interested in becoming an eco-municipality. So we'll see how that goes, and embracing what we call the natural step. And I'd like a chance to explain what the natural step is, because that's what we've used as the kind of template and program that we wish to promote among all these different groups as a common language.
Just ahead of that, what has been the challenge of expanding to embrace, I think, if I understand correctly, all of Racine County? We're talking about that, aren't we?
Well, we're talking about Greater Racine, which is east of the I.
Okay.
It's the county east of the I. We're happy to have other people come and be part of it, but our focus will be on the six municipalities.
Well, and that's certainly plenty. I misunderstood.
Yeah.
I thought it was all of the county, and then of course you get into something kind of complicated because it's it goes and goes and goes out to the west, and then to embrace all of that would be tricky. I mean, but this is even a challenge enough.
We've bitten off a huge amount, and we're kind of overwhelmed with all that needs to be done. We're now taking our steering committee and breaking into teams dealing with business or government or whatever. And one of the things we want to do is try to promote everything that's being done. And this is one chance to do it, for which we are very grateful.
Now, I'm just curious, the way you sort of characterize this is that as you got further and further into this, it's almost as though, you know, you and your colleagues were, in a sense, kind of astonished, very pleasantly surprised by all you found in terms of what is already being done.
Yeah.
I wonder if, in a sense, did that reshape then your sense of mission about all of this? And I could imagine someone looking at all of that and interpreting it very differently, thinking, oh, well, I guess we don't need this greater greening Racine thing after all. I guess all of this is already churning and moving along just fine. I mean, but clearly you looked at this and didn't view it that way. It has, if anything, galvanized you greater. But in what way, with all of this going on, then what becomes sort of the reshaped purpose?
Well, the first step is to see what we can do to get the word out about everything that's happening. We'd like the people in Racine to have a positive sense of this being a place which is kind of modeling how, you know, care for the earth can happen. But now our challenge is to encourage it to come to the next level in two ways, to take these individual efforts and see in what ways we can encourage them to take their individual business or government or whatever to the next step. And but even more important, to find a way in which we can provide a sense of a whole community working together at this. And that's where the natural step comes in. The natural step is a program that it began in Sweden, and it has been promoted for cities and for businesses, and it can be applied to any organization or residence. It's based on scientific principles that say, what do we need to be a sustainable Earth in the largest sense? And then what do we need to be a sustainable city? How can we contribute to that? And the four principles are: reduce your dependence on things that come from the Earth, fossil fuels and heavy metals. The second one is don't use products or reduce your use of products that are not biodegradable quickly, like plastic and other kinds of things. Reduce your use of those things. And the third principle is don't destroy the earth. Don't do sprawl that destroys the land or over monocrop. Don't overgraze. Don't pour into the water. Don't pollute the air. Find ways to minimize whatever it is we do that. And the final one is to help assist human beings, all human beings, particularly the least, in an effort to, the most vulnerable, in an effort to help them meet their needs. So you remove obstacles and provide things that are safe, encourage health, provide activities that are good, provide training or otherwise that enables living wage. There are all kinds of things that can be done in that area. But those four principles are sort of what the criteria are for us to be sustainable as a society and as an earth, because everything is so interconnected now. And we can see things degrading all over the earth. But what can we do for that? And now what the natural step, we got involved in this because I made a phone call to Madison, discovered they had adopted the natural step and wanted to find out what they were doing. Well, I talked with Carl Van Lith, who was in their trainer and developer for the natural step, and said, could we come over and take a look at what you're doing? He said, no, let me come to you. So he came, brought people with us, led this workshop, led the meeting for government, business, and the Golden Rondelle in the evening, gave PowerPoint slides, engaged in conversation, had the woman come from Sustain Dane to talk about how they've engaged in sustainable business network, getting people together to encourage each other, drawing new groups in. And a couple business people came over to the luncheon and talked about their engagement in it. It was terrific. And what we found was that this gave their whole community a sense of a common language to talk about these things, a common set of principles to apply, a common way in which they recognize that they there's a movement about collective impact these days where you realize that if you have an overall goal, all these different groups are then contributing to something that's common, and they realize that their own contribution is magnified, and it can even be increased and adapted to make the best contribution to the larger good. Racine isn't Madison. Madison isn't Racine, but we've learned an enormous amount from this natural step that would enable us to give us a symbol, a name, an identity overall that would, I think, help move the whole process of sustainability to a new level.
Mm. I'm curious, those four things are obviously really important. And I should think you already knew that those four things were really important. So within that, what is it that you learned that was so valuable?
Oh, I was just thinking about something you were saying just moments ago about a collective impact. You know, as a state, we have a rich and deep treasure trove of conservation, starting, you know, going way back. You know, when you think about increased Lapham and you think about Aldo Leopold and so many other people, who have contributed to our history of environmental sustainability long before we ever talked about that. And I just think, you know, what's happening in Sustain Dane and with Greening Greater Racine really speaks to that. It's just an outgrowth of that, if you will. And I hope that, you know, people who are listening in Walworth County, you know, in Kenosha County, I hope that this will spark an interest in you and pique your curiosity to get hold of Greening Greater Racine and start that conversation. Talk about what people in your community can start doing, whether it's a faith-based community or other people in the community. That was just what I was thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much. And you asked me what I learned from this. What I learned from this is that here is a step-by-step system to involve the whole organization. For example, when you embrace the natural step, you can bring people in who have engaged in it elsewhere to train your group. You train all the employees eventually, so everybody's on the same page. Mm. And you learn from the workers what will make a difference often that the executives don't know. It's a thing. You form a green team that gives accountability. And every time you make a decision, you look at these four principles and you say, now, what is it we're doing that contravene these, and how can we do it differently? So there's a sustainability sort of set of criteria. And then you have a scorecard where you say, okay, in relation to my business, what about the products I'm making? What about the processes I use to make them? What about the building itself and the electricity and the heat? What about the land around it? What about the vehicles I have and use? How can I do kind of an inventory, a comprehensive inventory of what I'm responsible for, or our business or government's responsible for, and how can we step by step make a difference? Now, you can't do it all at once. There are a lot of things you can't afford to do. We're not in the business of saying you have to stop something completely, you have to do this. You have to determine what's feasible. But you always want to be, in some sense, aware of these things, and as best you're able, push the envelope to move into sustainability.
So, in other words, you've learned a lot from this natural step system, in a sense, about implementation, about taking one's maybe high-sounding values and ideas and actually making them happen.
That's where the concrete thing is. And there's a book called Natural Step for Communities, Natural Step for Businesses, and they each have very surprising ideas about what people can possibly do to lower this. And Madison has some very interesting examples of what they've done. And they've lowered their energy in the city by 20% in 5 years. They've lowered their water use. They've added renewables. They are engaged in a program, national program, called Zero Waste, where you work toward lowering the waste that you have in the city as much as you can.
Hmm. As you described that, I was reminded of a book I have just read, because I just interviewed the author yesterday. The book is called Simple Rules, and the co-authors have sort of discovered that in many cases what is most helpful to creating anything that's beneficial is crafting simple rules. And one of the ideas is you should have few of them. I mean, if you have 10 guiding principles, that's just too many, and we just can't take that all in. But when you have three or four, and the idea that simple rules are on the one hand, fairly specific, and yet they can't be so specific that they prescribe every little detail. And
exactly.
They have to allow for innovation and flexibility. And as you were reading off these four principles of the natural step, I thought they must have read that book, or one way or another, they're adhering to the principles that they carry, because you can make this too complicated, too daunting, and really probably stifle people's sense of wanting to participate.
Too daunting and too, as you said, too particular. That sounds like a great book. I have to get a hold of it. in any case, the Sturtevant Group, Jeff Seitz, their engineer, reported all the things they've already done and said, now we need to take this to the next level. And then we looked at a resolution from Ashland to become an eco-municipality. And they have one-page thing, and they have the four basic principles stated very simply. And they do not specify what you're supposed to do. Hmm. Like you said, they give the principles. Then you have to decide what works for you, what's the low-hanging fruit that'll give the greatest payback, if in which economics is obviously important, what things will help the quality of life most. And you determine for yourself what you can best do in your location.
Hmm. How much do you find as you work on this in terms of people out in the public who as yet don't particularly care about this or do not share very much of your sense of alarm and concern about this, or by and large are the vast majority of people awakening to this concern and maybe just hungry for some tangible ideas about what to do about it, or is there still work to be done in terms of sounding the alarm?
Well, we don't want to be alarmist, but the situation is alarming. But our focus is on celebrating what has been done and seeking to promote those and work with those who are ready to go forward. There are enough people you can work with and groups and organizations. And hopefully that will bring others along, and you provide public information programs like at the Golden Rondelle, where you try to inform people as much as possible. And if we can begin to promote this widely in some various places, people will begin to think about this. And it's our job to provide, information that will help people understand better what to do. And in the case of, say, a business or a government, well, good heavens, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. There's the Wisconsin Sustainable Business Council, which will help establish a scorecard for businesses, and Madison will come and help us set up a sustainable business council if people decide that's what they would like to have. And so I think our desire is to be positive about things and to be encouraging of all those who are already doing it and encouraging those who are interested in doing it and eager to talk with people who are not doing it, who are resist in respectful ways. Because there are different points of view about all these things, not only in terms of the situation, but also in terms of how a society goes about making the changes.
It sounds also as though just about every single organization or entity that you have approached has eagerly welcomed participating in this.
Pretty much. And we've also been able to get other people in the community who were not originally part of the Racine Green congregations, like Melissa Caprellian Becker, who is a former alderman. And she knows a lot of people, and she has a lot of credibility and integrity. And when she talks with people that they should come and take a look at this, they come and take a look at it, and they may or may not be persuaded, but at least they're drawn into the conversation, and they see what's possible. Hmm. So we're trying to find ways in which everybody already engaged can spread the word with conversations.
Very good. Nan has been just smiling the whole time. This has to make you feel good to hear about this initiative and what it represents.
It does. It's inspiring. It's energizing. You talk about collective impact. This is how things happen. When you have a groundswell of people who've been doing their thing for a long time and doing really great work, all of these groups that Dr. Rhodes talked about, when you come together and you create this energy around it and you bring people into the conversation, pretty soon other people get caught up in that groundswell too. And there is an element of greater credibility that goes along with it. And, you know, you think of other things that have happened in our society. When you think of, you know, everyone used to smoke. And not that many, you know, comparatively not that many people smoke anymore. And it's because we had this groundswell of people from divergent areas, if you will, with the same goal come together and say, look, you know, I think we could do something better than this. And this is what this is all about. We can do something better than what we're doing now. And because we have such a strong environmental ethic in Racine, we can begin building that ethic elsewhere. It's really about building an environmental ethic. That's what it's all about. And then you can then address all of these difficulties, challenges, if you will, water consumption, water conservation, soil conservation, fossil fuel consumption, all of those things. It all goes together, but it's all built around an environmental ethic, and the people in Racine are the ones who can build on that pillar, on that foundation.
So if people want more information about this notion of greening Greater Racine, is there a website they can visit?
Yeah. It's in process of construction, so we have a lot to put up. But it's www.greeninggreaterracine.weebly.org. Weebly is offering a group where you can make your own website.
How do you spell that?
W-E-E-B-L-Y.org.
W-E-E-B-L-Y.org. Okay, so greeninggreaterracine.weebly.org. Very good. Reverend David Rhodes, what a great delight to reconnect with you today. I'm so glad you could be here on the morning show, and I look forward to you returning.
Thank you. I just want to clarify, even though I worked in Chicago, I've been 30-year Racine resident, and I love this city, and I've been part of a visioning process under Tom Pueller at Butterbuds and for Racine, and I just, the more I become engaged now that I'm retired here, I'm just at Racine, in Racine, and just increasing my love and appreciation for the city.
Well, we're glad you're here.
Thank you.
And glad you're specifically here at WGTD today.
Thank you.
Nan, we have just a few moments left, but give us what's coming up.
I certainly will. I just want to put a bug in everybody's ear. Right now, everyone who does summer camps in the greater Racine area, their registrations are open. So if you are looking for fantastic summer camp opportunities for your kids, please just Google various and sundry places like the Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center, Riverbend Nature Center, Pringle Nature Center, Hawthorne Hollow, all of those places. They have wonderful opportunities, all different kinds of things happening, all different kinds of price ranges happening for kids this summer. Sierra Club will be meeting to clean up Highway 38 and having a potluck at 9 o'clock in the morning. It's Highway 38 and 4 Mile Road in Caledonia. You need to bring gloves and a dish to pass. If you have something that needs to be refrigerated, you'll need to get hold of one of the people from Sierra Club. So what you need to do is go to the Sierra Club Southeast Gateway Group website, and it will have all of the details about that cleanup and other things that are going on. Hoy Audubon will be having a morning bird walk on May 15th at Riverbend Nature Center, and they will be repeating that on